Hello again. I'm Trevor Dan, and yes, we are back after a rather longer layoff than we expected. But we're all fit again and ready to go, I'm pleased to say. We're starting 2018 with the first round table of the year. And as always, it's a fascinating panel. We'll have some illuminating debate and a few recommendations for your future listening pleasure. So with thanks to Jazz FM for hosting us.
The Radio Today programme with Broadcast Bionics. Innovative solutions for creative radio people.
Let's meet the panel.
Hi, Trevor. I'm Nikki Birch. And I have a small agency called Rosina Sound, and we make interactive audio content as well as radio and podcasts.
So you're somebody who used to be a radio producer and is now an online audio producer.
I wouldn't call online audio, but yes, there's interactive audio. I'm also working for the BBC at the moment in their voice department.
What does the voice department of the BBC do?
Well, it's a brand new department. It's quite interesting, actually. They are working on delivering the BBC skill for Amazon Alexa and for Google Home, and also looking at voice-first formats.
Exciting. Donald McTernan is here.
Hi. I guess I'm described, apparently, as a community radio pioneer.
That's you.
I am a poacher-turned-gamekeeper. I've worked in the unlicensed sector. I've actually helped a station get a license, and then I've worked in the licensed sector, actually having worked for Ofcom and the regulator as well. I've run a radio station. I've advised radio stations on training, on where to get the money, what it looks like. I've run a station in Bristol. So I think I describe myself as a radio enthusiast.
And I met you at a symposium.
That's right, yes.
Which was a sort of workshop for university lecturing kind of people.
That's right. And I was speaking about local radio and how we could make the BBC more effective by working with community radio, and the two sectors could come together and actually create a new public broadcasting landscape.
Oh, more to talk about that later. Here's somebody with a bit of a local radio background, John Ryan.
23 years in the BBC, Trevor, yeah. Then 2012 I left to form my own production company, 2ZY, in Manchester, and I make shows for a range of people. Also the chairman of Gaydio, community radio station with a number of outlets across the UK now, world's largest LGBT radio station, and I run an 80s radio station called Max in Manchester.
And he is John Ryan. So welcome to the Radio Today Roundtable for January 2018. Well, we've got off to an explosive start. The Carrie Gracie affair, as it will henceforth
the BuzzFeed
be known.
News website, which was the first to publish her open letter to licensed fee payers, describes it as explosive and a bombshell. And at this point, given that Carrie is
what's
sitting...
What's happening next, John?
Well, indeed.
Where are we going from here?
And given that you are sitting next to me in the studio, perhaps listeners would expect me to do a really tough interview with you about that bombshell letter. But the BBC has rules on impartiality, which mean that presenters can't suddenly turn into interviewees on the programmes they are presenting. Well, maybe. Anyway, you are going to be doing an interview on Woman's Hour here on Radio 4 at 10 o'clock. But just a very quick thought. You're not allowed... Yeah, well, you know the rules.
We're not doing an interview.
Not doing
but
an
you're going to ask me
but
one
I'm
question.
Just, no, just the reaction being quite a big one, hasn't it?
It has. It's been very moving, actually. And the two things that have struck me most about it and moved me most, and one is, I think, the scale of feeling, not just among BBC women, but also just more widely across the country and also internationally, the support that I've had in the last few hours over this. I think it does speak to the depth of hunger for an equal, fair and transparent pay system. And I think the other thing I'd like to say is that what is lovely for me is that people are mentioning my China work, because I would not wish to be remembered forever as the woman who complained about money. You know, I want to be want to be remembered as the person who did some fine China work, and enough people are saying that for me to feel that will not get buried as a result.
Well, and they'll be right too.
So there was Carrie Gracie not being interviewed by John Humphreys, and then an hour or so later she was not being interviewed on Woman's Hour by Jane Garvey.
Now, because of BBC impartiality rules, I can't interview Carrie, but Jane Martinson is a freelance journalist and a former women's editor and media editor at The Guardian. She's in our radio car this morning, and she is going to speak to Carrie Gracie. So, Jane Martinson.
Thanks, Jane. Hello, Carrie. You're one of the most prominent female journalist at the BBC. You've never complained before. Why did you feel that you had to resign as China editor?
So this is a to-do, John Ryan. What's going on at the BBC? Why can't these journalists interview Carrie Gracie, their colleague?
Well, this reminds me of a friend who once told me a story about how his cat had fleas. And there was a point to this story. And he was getting the flea powder out of the bottom of the, under the sink where you keep that kind of stuff, sprayed the cat. And when the cat started trying to turn itself inside out, he realised he'd put cat repellent on it, not flea spray. And that's what the BBC was like yesterday, this cat trying to kind of spin around and duck and dive at the dance it did with itself to tell this story in the right way. I think it was bizarre. I was amazed Carrie was on today. I thought, even if everybody else had stepped out of the picture to enable that to happen, some dance was done there, wasn't there, to get her on,
well,
I'm guessing.
She was scheduled. The very opposite is the case. She was scheduled to be on it. So if they'd taken her off it, I guess they thought, well, that's an even bigger story.
I loved Humphrey suggesting to Mariella Frostrop that she was a star, not a journalist, and how she bit his head off.
Yes, that was nice.
Jane Garvey not being able to interview Carrie on Woman's Hour was extraordinary. It was just one of those BBC days when you think, I can totally understand why they did what they did having worked there, but I can't understand any of it at all.
Well, I'm going to press you a little. Can I just stay with John for a second? Because you run local radio stations, so you've been a BBC exec.
I've not had anything quite like this to deal with.
Well, but it made me really stop and think, well, you know, instinctively I'm thinking, this is just silly. This is BBC nonsense. And then I'm thinking, actually, what would I do?
There was
I
the
do?
Time we did, yeah.
Yeah, because you do think of occasions when you've had to say to a presenter, I'm sorry, you can't do that show because of what you've historically said about that issue. So, I mean, if it was you, John, what would you have done?
Well, it's a minefield because there's the follow-up story later in the day where anybody that had posted any kind of support for Carrie previously on social media or elsewhere, it was now kind of, it's getting back to that kind of Savile world where anything you had to do with the story were kind of one removed from the organisation, so you were no longer able to deal with it. Well, that's almost all the women in the BBC I know were on that side, so this story is going to come back in many cases in the future, not just around Carrie, but also the wider gender gap issue.
Nikki.
What I was going to say is that Jane Garvey was then interviewed on Five Live. So it becomes a kind of a domino affair, didn't it? It was fascinating. But I think the fundamental issue is huge, isn't it? And it's not obviously not just the BBC. It's indicative of the whole, you know, population, what happens in terms of pay disparity. And in many ways, it's kind of because the BBC were the first people to, big or large organisation, to publicly declare, you know, the salaries back in the summer, that this is, the BBC are kind of under fire. And the BBC loves to, you know, put itself in a fix and kind of, you know, whip itself on the back. But the reality is, you know, she was paid 50% less than her male colleagues. I mean, that's just outrageous. You know, I know there is the sort of celebrity issue in that talent and negotiations and agents and everything that goes with that. And perhaps, you know, one could argue that, you know, an American correspondent is you know, perhaps has more prestige than a China correspondent. But nonetheless, 50% is an incredibly large amount. So I think, you know, it has raised a really large issue. And you know, and well done for her for making a stand and bringing it again to the forefront.
Nikki, have you come across this issue in your own career?
Yes. I would say yes. And I think it comes down to a number of things. The fact that in most senior positions, you know, men dominate in a lot of senior positions. In obviously that a lot of women tend to take the childcare breaks. I think it comes down to the fact that there's also an ask and you will get philosophy that perhaps a lot of women don't think to ask. And so I think that, you know, I have come across it. It is really difficult to deal with. And it does, there's lots of issues around women in the workplace. And a lot of that comes to that sense of, I shouldn't be here. I don't belong here. I'm a fraud. And a lot of that comes into that sense of, well, why should I? I shouldn't ask for more money. I'm not worthy of more money. There's a huge confidence issue. So I think that, and particularly if I've spent time out of the workplace, either looking after children or caring for elderly parents, you know. So I think it's wrapped up in lots of things. And it's not, obviously, it's not just the BBC. And I just, you know, put it out there. This is system, you know, this is part of the workplace across all industries. And possibly, you know, the BBC is actually doing better than many.
Donald.
I mean, well, a couple of points. When did Twitter or liking a tweet suddenly mean that you're now eligible or ineligible to have an opinion on something?
Good point. It's not very long ago that BBC presenters weren't even allowed to tweet.
Exactly. Or Toby Young's 40,000 deleted tweets, but still in a position. Anyway, that's another subject. I'm in a different position slightly because the difference between the salaries between unequal pay. I'm in the voluntary sector. I've been in the charitable sector. It's never an issue for us because our procedures are so highly regulated, even when I worked with Ofcom. But we are funded through the public sector and the public purse, and we are monitored. People only get increments, and you can work out exactly where what people are being paid. Then on the other side of things, in community radio, there is no money.
There is no money.
There is no money. So everything is about willingness and ability. So the best people are the people that are willing and able, willing and also able. So male or female, it is totally irrelevant to us.
John, I think Nikki made an interesting point there about women being perhaps a bit diffident when it comes to negotiations. Certainly in my BBC experience, the guys, and they were always guys, who got the big pay rises were the ones who were the most shouty and the most combative, and in many cases had the most combative managers, agents. Is that an experience that you share?
It's interesting. Even at Manchester, it wasn't very agent-y. So you've probably dealt with more agents than I've had to deal with. With me, it was very much more the relationship between me and the presenters themselves. And certainly the women that I can think of could fight as hard as the guys.
Good.
Which is good. And I don't think, personally, it's one of those ones, you know, sometimes you look back at your own experiences and your own decisions and you think, oh, was I one of those guys? I don't think I was one of those guys.
I think it's also, that's on-air talent and there's off-air talent.
Yeah.
I think off-air talent is, it's many ways harder because you haven't got such a leverage, have you? You haven't got kind of audiences, you know, loving your work in such a way. And if you're off air and you're working behind, you know, the microphone or wherever you work, it's quite hard to play that kind of, you know, to go in and go, right, OK, I'm demanding higher salaries.
But I guess that's one of the places where you do have a bit more support from the organisation in that you have pay bands and usually HR will recommend what somebody... So that's kind of out of your hands a bit.
It's within actually, the BBC.
Within the BBC. Yeah, it's the bigger ones, you're right, the stars. Mm. I use that term loosely when it comes to some of them, but it's the level of audiences they can bring to it, the level of experience they have. I remember the toughest negotiation was Tony Wilson, who was
really?
Lovely. He was a lovely man, but he had an agent, and she was quite difficult. In the right way and very politely, and we got him in the end, but that was the... I remember that going back and forth many times.
OK, well, just for the avoidance of doubt, let me stress that Radio Today is an equal opportunity payer, and we're all on exactly the same for this show, which is, let me see... Oh, nothing at all. Diversity. Donald, I don't want to pigeonhole you, but you are a member of the BAME community, and you've built a career out of being... a leader and a pioneer, as you said before, in community radio. My sense from the talk that you were referring to earlier about working closer with the BBC mm-hmm. was that, at least in a sense, you were saying the BBC still hasn't gone far enough in terms of representation on air.
Well, I think there's a strong possibility that since Greg Dyke made his famous statement, things may actually have got worse. May have got worse. But the on-air and off-air talent has probably not changed. Or, let's be fair, there's still a long way to go. In fact, no, there is no systematic way of trying to address this. I'm not sure what the BBC are actually doing. So whether they're picking up the odd person here or there, there's no system.
What should they be doing that you feel they're not?
Create a strategy. People talk about affirmative action. I'm not talking about affirmative action in any way, shape or form. Never agreed with that. But taking up positive actions, reaching out. OK, on the BBC today... this morning on the Victoria Derbyshire show, there was a short piece about Prince Harry and his fiancée going to represent radio in Brixton. So it's a very short piece. Now, what represent was saying what the piece was actually saying, and it never actually mentioned the word community radio. It talked about local radio, which was weird. But what it said was that they went there because of the knife crime thing and their connections, but you know, they want to see what the community is doing and what people are trying to do. Represent is developing, training 4,000 people. 4,000 people in various radio skills. Now, imagine if they were given some money to actually take the top 100 of those to the next level. And then out of that, you squeeze 10, of which 5 may go onto a BBC training scheme of some kind. So that's the positive actions, using the what's already out there and developing, just basically developing talent. That's representing Brixton. There's stations in Bristol, in Nottingham, in London, in Manchester, across the UK, where we could be developing talent that could be then getting jobs working for the BBC.
Nikki.
It's just an aside, but I was actually listening to Represent yesterday to like a drum and bass show, and they said Meghan and Harry are coming down, and I thought they were taking the mic.
No, they're coming down. No. They're one of my clients and one of my friends, a station that I've worked with on many, many occasions. I've actually got a much deeper historical connection to them. They're actually based in a building that I helped to create a community development hub in the New Cross area. That's where they started. They're now based in two different sites, one in Brixton and one in Peckham.
That's totally brilliant, isn't that brilliant?
It's amazing what they're doing.
Now, Nikki and John, we're white people, and we go to meetings, we go to the radio festival, we go to conferences, we go to BBC commissioner meetings. When Donald has that same experience, he says, as he said at the podium at that event, he said, "I don't see a lot of people who look like me."
No, he's right.
He is right, isn't he? Now, it's 30 years ago we were talking about this. Why has the radio industry not done more to address this, do you think?
It's a huge failure on our part, isn't it? And I think it's a real shame, and it's out to our detriment. And it's interesting that Donald mentioned Represent, because it's not saying that there aren't black and ethnic minority people working in radio and volunteering in radio and making great content, because they are. You know, perhaps they're just not in the sort of paid jobs so much, or the powerful structures, and that's a real shame. I ran a couple of courses this summer for one based down in Hackney Wick, which was young people from the local area, and in a kind of, it was with this pirate, well, it would have been pirate radio station, online radio station called Don City FM. Big up Don.
And great name.
Thank you. You would have liked that one, Don City. Yeah. Anyway, they and we did this brilliant week's workshop, which was all young people about basically just get how to do a show on air, and it had these amazing. And I learned so much from the young people there. I had the education, not them. It really was really enlightening. And yet, I couldn't, from the end of that, think, what's the pathway for them for the next step? I didn't see that.
Is one of the problems that the BBC asks you to fill in this form when you apply for a job, that requires you to list a whole load of educational qualifications that you've had, and that some of the best people who are coming, well, frankly, out of all communities, but into radio, don't necessarily have all that behind them?
I'm not sure that's the case. Certainly, I didn't go to university. I'd flunked my A-levels 2 months in to go and work at 210 in Reading, because they offered me a job, because I was hanging out there all the time, like we used to in the old days, when all those stations had a team of anoraks, you know, from all different sorts of communities that came in and came through. I think it's people just not bothering to do their job is the case. I've worked on stations where the editors of all colours and communities have been particular champions of diversity, and sometimes that's meant they've taken a flyer on people, maybe before they would. But we've done that with white people before, so why not some people who aren't white? I also think it's really important that, much as the gender thing and the BME thing is important, I'm obviously going to say the LGBT thing is important, but also...
We represent a good spread here, don't we?
We're good. Yeah. But I also think there's a social exclusion thing. There's, people without degrees, people without A-levels.
Definitely.
You know, people who voted Brexit. That would be nice to see some more of those on stations.
So I mean, diversity is about everybody.
Yeah.
It's not about me being black or anyone being gay or anyone being female. It's about everybody.
Mm. Echo chamber, and fake news.
Yeah, and representing the way that society looks in general.
Community radio, I would argue, is a good place for the local radio stations that have been told they don't have to take their evening shared programme any longer to look for new broadcasters who are going to bring new voices onto their stations. Is that
We did community naive? Radio bootcamp in Manchester probably about 7 years ago now, where we had 10 community radio stations at the time in Greater Manchester. And we had about 60 people through from those 10 stations. And I feel that was quite a simple thing to do. And yet it gave us a real insight into, firstly, where the keen ones were and where the good people were. You think, oh, that one, she was great, or that guy that did that tape, he was awesome. Tape.
wasn't the tape. Tape of which you speak.
So I think there are quite, you're right, they're simple and not very expensive things you could do if you can be asked.
Nicky.
Yes.
There are a number of schemes up in place. You know, I was also working on another one with a company called Creative Partnerships in November, which took a young unemployed people round, and they went to Worldwide FM, and they went to NTS, they went to BBC, you know, and with a very strict view of getting them jobs, right? These weren't just, BME people, they were young unemployed people. That was the remit. But, you know, there are lots of things happening. It's just not on a big enough scale, I think.
And it's not coordinated. Mm. I think that's the thing. If it's coordinated, everything that we've said is very low cost. And if there was a community journalist at the heart of, or 150 of them around the country, helping to coordinate this, then it would be amazed at what could actually be achieved.
We could talk for hours about this, but yes, we must move on. It's the Radio Today Roundtable for January 2018, and here is a commercial announcement.
Broadcast Bionics brings you PhoneBox, Oasis, Virtual Director, and many more innovative solutions for creative radio people. Come to bionics.co.uk and find out more.
Nicky Birch is here, Donald McTernan and John Ryan are here too. I'm Trevor Dan, and we're going to talk about a couple of things that perhaps a little more briefly than our previous topics. This job title for local radio managers, John, you've been one. Now, when I was one, I think...
Were you editor of local services ever?
No, I was never editor. I was...
ELS.
I think I was called manager.
Yeah.
And then they became managing editors, and then they became editors?
Editor local services,
right,
for a while.
And now they
which
are...
Which I've already ignored.
Yeah.
I just called them managing editors. Yeah. Now they are... Let me get this right. Because the assistants are something different now.
Now they are...
Senior news editors.
Yes, that's it. They're senior news editors.
Well, firstly, you've got to be tongue-in-cheek, because they're not going to call them that. Everyone's calling them the man-ed still, I guess. But for me, it's another one of those things. I'm cautiously optimistic about Tony Hall at the Gillards and the changes that we're going to see. Better to be a series of independent republics than a police state. But I think that requires a pretty honed breadth of skills. News is important. You're definitely the editorial leader on the station. But there's so much more going on. You're leading a team of maybe 50 people, responsible for partnerships within the BBC and outside. Every day is an adventure. Like, you might have to respond to an audience complaint, sort out a presenter that tweeted something dodgy that morning, get someone to fix the toilet in the district office because nobody else is going to do it, all before the morning meeting. And this is not just a news job. It fails to reflect the range of tasks that a decent station manager has to do. So I don't think it'll matter, because people just call them what they're going to call them. But it's another example of a lack of understanding of what this job is. And certainly if, given the breadth of these stations, Hall's ambition to kind of make them a broader range of output, if there's going to attract people into the BBC, into these roles from other parts of the media, then certainly putting that title above the job doesn't really reflect it.
I think we've possibly put that issue to bed, haven't we?
Well, I'm just going to say, it is actually indicative.
Thank you, John.
It is actually indicative of the problem caused by Carrie Grace as well. Maybe it is time to actually take a step back and have a rethink about the structures that are managing and operating the BBC at every level, and renaming, rebranding.
That's where this has come from.
You know,
trying to make it all the same.
But
we have a local radio station manager, because that's what they do. They run a local radio station.
A local radio station manager is a local radio station manager, and maybe the word editor is not really the right term for it. Or whether you're an international editor, I mean, the whole thing perhaps needs to be. Take another look.
It's entirely to do with job titles. It's words like editor, words like correspondent, words like manager. They have a meaning that is meant to define your status.
I know, but perhaps now...
Now's
the time to chuck it away and start again.
I'm
going to be that bloke on the Today programme. I'm going to stop you there. Because I want to talk about podcasting.
Yeah.
Because 5Live... have announced 3 more podcast-only shows. This is very much their direction of travel. It's something that you know a lot about, Nicky, so I wonder what you thought.
I actually put this... I knew I was going to come on here and talk about this, so I put it to the podcast community. I kind of asked them on a Facebook page.
Who are they?
Oh, you need to get on board. There's a good Facebook group of about 3,000 podcasters that Helen Zaltzman set up, actually. Fantastic. Oh. Anyway, so I thought they've always opinionated. And it's interesting because previously the podcast community have always felt a little bit, angered by the BBC's kind of march into, when I say march, they've been there, BBC podcasting, basically. There's a sort of feeling that they were just rehashing radio programmes and calling them podcasts, and the kind of podcasters, the true podcasters, always felt quite cross about that. And obviously now, with this slight change, they are, BBC are becoming true podcasters. Now, from the BBC's perspective, they were right at the forefront of podcasting, and they've had some amazing successes like Kermode and Mayo and recently Blue Planet. And now this is an extension, and they've now kind of, Bob Shannon has kind of announced last year how they really, they were there early, but they didn't really take it seriously. And now they're kind of really going to engage. So it's kind of, on the one hand, I think it's fantastic for audiences and for the podcasting world, because they will have you know, a lot more energy and money and kind of in terms of the actual platform, brilliant for British podcasting, because we have lagged behind elsewhere in the world. From the independent podcaster's perspective, I do feel it's a little bit of a shame in that they've done so well in spite of the BBC, and I wondered if there was a way that the BBC could bring the independents on board here. And is there some kind of tool, is there part of the tools and the technology that they will be using to, hopefully the BBC will help in terms of podcast discovery or something like that, they can actually engage with the wider podcast community? Because I think there's a bit of work to be done there.
Isn't 4Extra starting a programme about podcasts?
Possibly, yes.
I read. I don't know what kind
of show
it is.
I don't know. I know Podcasting House.
What did your podcast chums say when you...
Well, they were quite split around that. Some of them were still annoyed, but most of them were kind of like, this is good. It's good for the industry. It's good for us. Perhaps they'll take some ideas. You know, so I think there was a general feeling that, you know, it was a positive thing if they can make, there's a bit of snide remarks, if they can make some good content.
Donald. Again, I come from a slightly different perspective on this. I think pretty much all radio is podcasting of one type or another. The modern, or the podcast community, which I'd never heard of, but now I can't wait to meet some of them. I'm going on Facebook as soon as we leave here and I'm joining. You know, there are so many stations, things are becoming so niche. And what a group of people, one of the things I also actually do, I'm a stand-up comedian. I don't think I've ever mentioned that to you. I'm on a break, I'm writing a book.
We've never guessed.
You never guessed.
No, be familiar with the word polymath.
but stand-up comedians have been doing podcasts for quite a while now, and are probably at the forefront of the podcast community. I'm a critical friend of the BBC. I think he's got so much to offer. So if the BBC wants to push the boat out on podcasting, and then I'm all for it, because I think they'll bring skills and maybe some money to some of the people as well, but also just to broaden the whole thing out, because I think podcasting is pretty much the future of broadcasting.
I'm really conflicted, because certainly when I was in the BBC, I thought, let's get the stuff out, people have paid for it, license fee payers, we should do as much as we need to do. And now obviously I make podcasts for other people and myself and different people. You think BBC tax on the lawn, that kind of argument. I can see totally why some people would have a different view. These three are interesting in that I think they're not particularly specialist. And I'm thinking, are they not just radio programmes that ought to be on 5 Live? I know 5 Live don't do half-hour shows, but they look like they're very listenable, general offers.
The fitness one is quite niche, I'd say. So that probably wouldn't be on 5 Live. It's going to be a kind of, it's much more podcasty in tone.
Colin Murray Meets Some Sporty People.
Colin Murray Meets Sporty People is actually quite good. I listened to the Gary Lineker one from last season. I mean, they're good programmes. Obviously they are. They're fantastic producers working on them. But I think maybe they're shifting into tone. I think there is a difference between podcasting and radio. Obviously, it's still people talking on you know, through your devices. But in terms of what they're talking about and how those conversations they're having, it's niche. And you know, you can have a whole podcast series based on, you know, or a whole podcast episode based on the first mile of your marathon, you know, and that's quite normal and standard. Whereas you wouldn't have that on air on radio, because it would just be like, oh God, it's too indulgent.
I beg to differ.
possibly on some stations.
Resonance FM had someone pushing a pram through Hyde Park for 2 hours.
Good point.
I mean, to me, the difference is just mainly that I think, if you podcasting or free-to-air broadcasting means that one of them has a transmitter and one of them doesn't.
One more thing. I know this is a very age-old discussion, right, we're having, but I think there's something about joining a community. And when you appeal to a podcast, it's like, I've made this choice. I've actively chosen to listen to something. And often it's where I want to be part of that conversation. Not all podcasts are like this, obviously, but there's a thing where I was like, okay, these are my people, because I really love talking about Dungeons and Dragons, and I'm going to find that podcast and I'm going to be part of that community, and that's quite different.
I want to get on to what we've been listening to, but just a quick word on today's breaking news. We think Christian O'Connell from Absolute is probably on his way to work for an Australian radio station. Mm. Anybody, any thoughts on that?
Lucky him, mate.
Good luck, Christian.
I think British broadcasters are the best, and we can go across to Australia and teach them how to
as
do things.
As long as they don't send any back to us.
They've had some bad experiences, haven't they?
What does that mean? Who's going to be lined up then for Breakfast Show on Absolute?
Don't know. Well, your thoughts welcome, as they say on the radio. And they say it on podcasts and often don't mean it. We'll come back in a tick.
Hey, I'm Josh Collins.
I'm Chris.
I'm Mark Gale.
Hi, I'm Amber Stone.
Hi, I'm Stephen Daly.
I'm Sarah Hughes.
Hi, I'm Matt Shields.
I'm James Martin.
Hello, I'm Graham Torrington. And we're all available for your station today via voicetrackerhub.com.
Need a last-minute show covered? Or have a regular weekend show going?
CHR.
Hot AC.
Gold.
We've got you covered with top-class talent from around the world.
Search according to format and budget and contact presenters directly.
Find your remote radio talent today.
VoiceTrackerHub.com.
John Ryan, Donald McTurnan and Nikki Birch have joined me for the Radio Today roundtable for January. It's traditional to listen to what they've been listening to, so I'm going to start actually with you, John.
Do you know this is quite difficult? Because I haven't heard much good stuff over Christmas.
Oh,
isn't that
tragedy.
Depressing? Partly because you're in different places and different times, and but I have sought something out because, and forgive the rambling story, I listened to an edition of Feedbacks for Christmas, which was terrible, and there was a little package about this new version of Midwich Cuckoos performed by people who feel different in some way because they're deaf, for example, some of the performers. And I thought over yesterday, I just thought I'd download this and have a listen, partly because Eloise Whitmore is the sound designer, who I know you know, Trevor, and Ellie's brilliant. I thought, well, I wonder what she's done with this. And it's the Midwich Cuckoos, the John Wyndham thing. I remember reading that when I was a kid and being quite affected by it. And the idea is it, they call Grey, the theatre company that put this together, G-R-A-E-A-E. And their artistic director said, based on growing up feeling different and the cast of deaf and disabled actors will identify with the cuckoos and you'll get something different out of it. So I hate radio drama. I love radio and I love drama. I hate radio drama. But I sat down to listen to this. And just the way it's, partly the way it's crafted, so big up Ellie and the producers and everybody else, it kind of whips along. So you don't get that kind of, this is a bunch of people stand around a microphone with clipboards that I see when I hear radio drama sometimes. I'm not sure you get that connection between the people's own stories and the characters they're playing. But it was a really nice hour of radio. Really well produced. In fact, 2 hours.
Let's have a clip.
Feeling no exact details as to what may have occurred in the tower of Midwich, where for all intents and purposes the entire town
of an unidentified flying object detected by radar in the Midwich area.
Get away from me now!
Hello, Hand here. And, let's start. Ah. Finally. Me again, Anthea. Sorry about that. This machine just decided to die on me. I had to plug it in. You know what I'm like with technology. Flipping well hopeless, as you used to say.
Come back to you in a minute, John. That was a Midwich Cuckoos. Nikki.
Okay, I'm going to follow type and say, talk about a podcast. I spent a lot of my kind of radio producer's career as a music producer, mostly doing a lot of docs. And I grew very tired of music docs and felt very exhausted by why they're the same format and frustrated. And it usually ended up being kind of the finale was like, and then this, you know, this one song or this genre will change your life. Or it was sort of, it all felt very the same, you know, and I couldn't really find another way through this. And it turns out that other people have done that. And I'm really reassured to know that there are other ways of presenting music journalism now. And it's, you can find that in podcasts and there's some fantastic stuff. The one I really enjoy is Hip Hop Saved My Life by Ramesh Ranganathan. That's is just basically the comedian talking with various different people about why they love hip hop. It's fantastic, and obviously it helps if you like the guest. But you know, sometimes he can have his mum on the show, or he'll have Adam Buxton. I really recommend the Adam Buxton interview because it's just them talking about how much they love Biggie Smalls. It's hilarious.
This is the Hip Hop Saved My Life podcast. Thank you for listening to the podcast. Hope you enjoy the podcast. Now sit back, because it's time for the podcast.
Hello and welcome to Hip Hop Saved My Life. I am joined by comedian Tiernan Duyeb. How are you doing, Tiernan?
Yeah, I'm good, thanks, man. And that was well pronounced. Thanks.
Thank you very much. We were just talking before we started recording about, I know how to say your name, but when it's about to be recorded, I don't know, I feel pressure. Do you know what I mean? And then we're talking about, where was it that we first met?
We first met, I think, I might be wrong, but I'm sure it was like this little gig at some, like, university in East Anglia or something.
Yeah, that's what I think it is. I remember you were hosting.
But going on that line, other music podcasts that I've enjoyed this year has been Mogul, which is the American one, which is again the story of Chris Lighty, and that's another kind of hip hop. It's like a story of hip hop, but told through the story of one player in there, and I think that's a really great and interesting way of doing it. And another one which also I'd recommend.
I asked you to bring two, Nicky.
I know. I'm just giving three hip hop podcasts
just
that are really. No, but you don't have to play them all, but this is great. I want to show you how it's done differently. The final one, which was recommended to me by Jason from The Guardian, is Dissect. And that's a guy called Cole Kushner, who basically takes a hip-hop album and week by week really dissects each track. And he's done a fantastic version of a series on Kendrick Lamar's To Pimp a Butterfly. So three fantastic hip-hop podcasts I really recommend checking out.
I think I'll check some of that. Actually, my comment was more about I'm more of a Tupac than a Biggie man. That was all it was, really. It's strange. I've got two things that really hit me. I'm a massive Brexit junkie and a Ramona. The Brexit podcast on Five Live, I found that to be massively disappointing, considering the lineup of people that were there, and it felt like
this is Laura Koonsberg and Chris Mason and Adam Katya Adler, yeah.
Considering who was on it, and it felt more like watching to Test Match Special,
absolutely.
But with Brexit as the theme, and what a disappointment, because that can be really good if
they can't express an opinion.
They can't.
Have you listened to Romaniacs?
No, I haven't, but
that's,
I will now.
Now Romaniacs, that's terrific.
It's a shame because you've got top quality journalists and they're not really allowed to say what they really think. There are loads of little in jokes that if you think about it, you think, oh yeah, but it's like you get it just after they've said it and now they've moved on.
We did a whole thing on this show about Romaniacs a few months ago, and that's still there in the Radio Today page. Let me move you on to your other suggestion then that you wanted to talk about, Dom.
Dotton Adebayo.
Oh, we like him.
I like Dotton too. In fact, Dotton and I went to the same university together as well, at the same time, and used to be, he's a mate. He did a show over the Christmas with his two daughters in the studio, and it was a lesson in fatherhood, a lesson in broadcasting.
And what station was this on?
This is on Radio London, BBC Radio London. And he brought his two kids in, and his wife, the reggae singer Carol Thompson, as he describes her, the legendary reggae singer Carol Thompson, and his two children. And his two children took over the show, basically, and it was a thing of beauty to watch, because clearly Dotton had worked out exactly what he was going to do during the show, and his two kids literally just took over, questioned everything that he said, and what's the difference between a show and a programme, Dad? You know, and things of that nature. And just to me, I listen to Dotton most weeks, but I'd actually just stumbled on this. I didn't know this episode was coming up, if you like. This particular programme was coming up.
For people who are not in London, what does Dotton do on Radio London? Because he does overnights on five.
He does overnights on five, up all night, Thursday, Friday, Saturday, Sunday, I think. And then on Radio London, it's the Dotton Adebayo show. It used to be something else, but now it's the Dotton Adebayo show. It's on from 8 till 10. 8 till 10 on a Sunday night? Yeah, on Radio BBC Radio London.
We're talking Meet the Adebayos!
Hi.
Hi.
Okay, let's go around the table. This is Christmas with the Adebayos, starring the Queen of Lovers Rock.
Hello, everybody. Hello. Happy Christmas to everybody.
Merry Christmas.
Oh, Merry Christmas, been corrected.
That's Mrs. Adebayo.
Thank you.
Some of you know her better as what?
Your wife.
Yeah, okay. Oh, the heckler's now looking, turning the other way. She's not even bothered with conversing with us. She's watching the television. Oh, okay.
The heckler is your first daughter.
Yes.
Eldest. Yes. And my name is Temi.
Hi, good to meet you, Temi.
Lovely to be here. Thank you for inviting me.
You're welcome. And Merry Christmas, by the way.
Oh, Merry Christmas to you too. Long time no see.
Okay, have I got one more daughter?
Yes, you do.
Yes, I do?
I think you do.
Well, only a wife can ever know.
I definitely know. She definitely is your youngest daughter.
Okay. Hello, youngest daughter. Hello, how are you?
Good. Yeah.
You're with us, yeah?
Yes, I'm here. You're with us. I'm present.
Merry Christmas!
Final one from you then, John.
Funny you guys were mentioning Brexit stuff. I think we're all a bit closer to Question Time and other shows like that, aren't we, at the moment, than we maybe were a couple of years ago. And I've discovered the Times Red Box podcast. Redbox is their kind of, within the paper, they do lots of political coverage around this. And their editor is a guy called Matt Chorley, who has, he's one of these newspaper people that's come to doing a podcast but has quite a nice way about him, and because of his contacts has some great people on every week that aren't the people you hear all the time. And there's actually quite a humour about it. It's got running gags, which again is in that podcast space where you kind of need to tune into it, I guess, a few times to get it. And I've heard like 5 or 6 weeks worth now, and I'm beginning to get it. So you know when you discover something, you want to tell people about it. That's what I want to say about
Tuesday morning, which is Tuesday today as we do this. We had our politics meeting, and I sat there as we were talking about Theresa May, thinking this is probably how sports reporters talk about Arsene Wenger. really, it's kind of what they were saying is every time you think she's gone, she wins a game. You know, maybe in a relatively unimportant game, maybe a quite important game, and is triumphant again. And everybody says, you know, actually it's not the time. And then as soon as they lose 4-2 to Nottingham Forest, and this reshuffle was a 4-2 loss to Nottingham Forest, essentially, wasn't it, Chris? Then in that case, it's time for her to go again. But the same problem crops up every single time. If it's time for her to go, then who on earth is it time to have in there who's going to do something significant that's different? And so what I kind of perceive is just stasis. They're stuck.
It's more like that Stoke manager, isn't it, who puts up his B division team hoping to save the A division for the better match later.
And then the one who was sacked this week.
The one who then he gets sacked.
So, one final thing while I've got you all here. In a sentence, what's 2018 looking like? We got any predictions, any thoughts, Nikki?
I'd like to hope it's going to be voice first, because that keeps me in work at the moment. So I hope we're going to be accessing new and interesting content via our voice devices towards the end of the year.
Donald.
Community radio, local radio and community journalism are all going to get together and create a national strategy for improving public sector broadcasting.
I think small-scale DAB is going to be very interesting now the consultation is out there. I think what Gary Stein does at Bauer will be fascinating to see if he can make that work. And who knows what BBC Local will be doing in 12 months' time.
John Ryan, Donald McTurnan, Nikki Birch, thank you very much for being our great panel on the radio today. Roundtable for January 2018. Who wants to hear the latest news with Stuart Clarkson?
We all do.
Exactly.
Thank you, Trevor. This week, big changes are coming to the Radio 2 schedule from May as Joe Wiley joins Simon Mayo on a new extended drive time show, which will go out 5 till 8 Monday to Thursday, 5 till 7 on a Friday. 8 till 10 during the week will be specialist music and documentary programmes. And then Sarah Cox hosts a new late show, 10 till midnight Monday to Thursday. Live overnights are returning to Radio 2 as well, with OJ Borge doing 3 till 5 weekdays from Salford. Gary Davis takes over Sarah Cox's Friday Night Sounds of the 80s show, and Kerris Matthews joins the station to do the blues show, replacing Paul Jones, who's leaving Radio 2 after more than 30 years. Also disappearing from the Radio 2 schedule are The Organist Entertains, Listen to the Band, and The Arts Show. You can read more about all the changes at radiotoday.co.uk. Also this week, there's a new culture secretary as part of the cabinet reshuffle. Matt Hancock moves up from Minister of State at DCMS to take on the top job instead of Karen Bradley. Matt's replacement at DCMS as the minister is Margot James. Global has announced its plans for new purchases, The Bay and Lakeland Radio. The Bay in Lancaster will become Heart, while Lakeland becomes Smooth. These changes are happening from March. And more changes coming to the Heart Network programme schedule. Rochelle Humes is doing a new Saturday 4 till 7 show, while Lila Parsons joins for Friday and Saturday nights 10 till 1am. Annalise Days takes over Club Classics from Mark Wright. That's Friday and Saturday nights. Also new to the schedule, Kevin Hughes 1 till 4 on a Saturday, and James Stewart on weekend overnights. Oh, and Jason Donovan's old Sunday night slot on Heart goes to Emma Bunton, which she adds to her diary, as well as staying on Heart London Breakfast. Lots more radio news from this week and everything you've missed from over Christmas and New Year at radiotoday.co.uk.
Thank you, Stuart, and thanks for minding the shot while I was indisposed. We're off for a rummage in David Lloyd's attic. Radio
Moments. This year is going to see the end of the networked evening programme on BBC Local Radio, a programme which began this week 5 years ago.
Here we are then, a new year, a new show, and a new presenter. Quite exciting, really, isn't it? Well, it's excellent to have your company, and you're very, very welcome to the programme that links together the BBC local radio stations across England and the Channel Islands. Every day, I'll unearth for you some radio gems, those little bits of local radio gold dust that I think deserve a wider airing. Why? Well, because they interested me, they touched me, sometimes they move me, and I think that you should hear them too. For example, today, BBC Radio Sheffield revealed that Olympic gold and gold...
Mark Forrest with the first All England evening programme this week in 2013.
And that all-important first tune?
Most recently, the programme's been hosted by Georgie Spanswick. It'll be replaced, according to the DG, with all manner of things, local or regional. In commercial radio now, 2018 may see some more brand spread and maybe some frequencies being repurposed as FMs are shuffled internally by the groups too, as soon as the rules allow. The last addition to the Capital Fold arrived 2 years ago in Liverpool, and this week the old tenant on that frequency waved farewell.
So, from us, Jay and Ellie, that is it, that was our last show, but not only that, the last show of Juice Liverpool.
Yeah.
But things are about to get extremely exciting. A week on Monday, 18th of January, Gemma, Adam and Imogen kick it all off with the first ever Capital Liverpool breakfast show from 6am, so be listening. Anton Powers is still going to be about... Yeah.
Juice in Liverpool, ending this week in 2016. It had lasted 16 years, launched by Giles Squire in the year 2000, who was none too keen back then on its original name, Crash.
We knew that was not going to work as a name. I just couldn't work out what... I can see people thinking they want to do something that's really innovative and outrageous, but from a commercial point of view, I could see, oh, yeah, you know... Well, I was thinking, when we do stuff, you know, join British Airways and Metro Radio, and you got join British Airways and Crash. Oh, no, that's not a good, you know, and you couldn't see how you could do it commercially or do any of the sort of promotional sponsorship tags. You couldn't work with computer companies, cars, or anything where Crash meant something completely different.
Programmer Giles Squire, then at Forever Broadcasting. Happy 10th anniversary this week to Smooth in the Northeast. That regional licence had been awarded to Saga, but never went on air. And then, after a 2-year wait...
Smooth Radio. Coming soon to the Northeast. Music from the past 5 decades and today. Smooth Radio. Coming soon to this frequency.
I think it's brilliant. It's the best thing that's ever happened to music in this area. I'm a 61-year-old with a very deep love of music from the 50s onwards up to the present day, and you're playing absolutely superb music.
Happy 10th anniversary to Smooth in the Northeast. In its area, only Radio 2 beats it by reach. Steve Wright and Afternoons are like bread and butter, but this week in 1994, he was asked to munch on another day part.
So today, exam revision tips, album reviews, the movies, the TV, the papers, the traffic, the newsagent, voiceover man, the posse, it's all right here.
Good morning from What's Yes Next.
Steve Wright, who began his 15 months on Radio 1 Breakfast 24 years ago. This week in 1956, a new presenter for Pick of the Pops, then heard on the BBC Light programme on Tuesday evenings.
Let us just point out here that we over here have produced our own indigenous rock and roll with instinctive humour. Indeed. May we bring you, and to your attention, if you've not already heard it, this record by Gale Warning and the Weathermen of Met Rock.
Changing the guard on Pick of the Pops to Alan Dell this week, 62 years ago. He was the presenter who first introduced the weekly chart. The programme moved to Sunday tea time 6 years later. Is it really 15 years this week since Jeremy Vine took over JY's programme?
Good afternoon and the warmest of welcomes to the Jeremy Vine Show. Very nice to be with you. Today we discuss guns among young black men. Will a change in the law change the culture? The Home Secretary's here. Plus, the warning from a Gulf War veteran: if our troops go into Iraq, they could end up being killed by Americans under friendly fire. In the second hour, it's Monday, so it's health.
It was one of those awful BBC things where they decided to oust Sir Jimmy Young. He didn't want to go. He did the brilliant thing of hiring press, and the whole thing became trench warfare. Didn't involve me, as I say, but it was very painful for the station. It's one of those corporate moments where you think, surely there's got to be a way of handling this better, you know, and you sort of learn from it, and you think at some point when they say, Jeremy, you've just done your last show, you've got to try and be sporting.
Jeremy Vine taking over Jimmy Young's old lunchtime show on Radio 2 in 2003. So, with Chris Evans' first Radio 2 breakfast show 8 years ago...
It's a huge thing to take over, but it's what I do for a living. It's not like I'm being asked to play football for England tomorrow night.
The death of David Bowie, announced on Heart 2 years ago, almost.
David Cameron has died. David Bowie has died after a secret 18-month battle with cancer.
The early commercial digital talk service, One Word, replaced by Birdsong 10 years ago.
Maybe it's time to have the first reading from The Rule of Claw.
And the death of Ed Stewart 2 years ago.
Morning Town Ride has always been our favourite.
Those are this week's Radio Moments.
This week in history... Radio Moments.
Thanks to David, Stuart, our panel, Nick and Claire at Jazz, and of course you for listening. This has been a TDC production, and next week I'll be reporting from the mailbox in Birmingham. What are the BBC up to in there these days? Join me for that if you can. Ta-da.
The Radio Today programme with Broadcast Bionics, creating and distributing clever software for radio.